Will you spend another summer working on your yard for your spouse, kids, and guests? Or would you rather spend the summer with your spouse, playing with the kids, and relaxing with guests? Hire Blue Duck Lawn Care to get the super healthy lawn you'll love and neighbors will envy. Blue Duck does the fertilizing and weed control. You just mow to get a lush, thick lawn. Best in your neighborhood. If it's got to be green, hire Blue. BlueDuckLawnCare.com. Remember, if it's got to be green, hire Blue. BlueDuckLawnCare.com.
A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. This is the Second Amendment, and this is the Gun Guy.
Boom, 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 boom. Bang, 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 bang. Boom, 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 boom. Bang, bang, bang.
With Guy Ralford on 93 WIBC.
Well, good afternoon and welcome to the Gun Guy Show here on 93 WIBC. Very glad to have you with us. As always, we've got a whole bunch to talk about. We'll talk more about what's going on in the Indiana General Assembly that can potentially affect your Second Amendment rights, both on the positive and the negative. So there are certainly some bills introduced invariably by Democrats, but not exclusively, that would seek to restrict your rights. And they get filed every single year. And every single year, we have to both play offense and defense when it comes to the fight for Second Amendment rights. Playing defense includes trying very hard to defeat the bills that restrict our Second Amendment rights. And as usual, the usual cast of characters have come in there and filed bills. We'll get into that more much later in the show. Early in the show, I'm going to have Larry Correa in. Larry's a very prolific writer. You may likely know him from the Monster Hunter International series. I think described as urban science fiction. But a fantastic line of books. He's won multiple awards, primarily in the area of fiction and fantasy. However, he has recently published, in fact, it just came out on the 24th of this month, a book entitled In Defense of the Second Amendment. And I got to tell you, I just got my copy Thursday, and I loved reading it. It's a quick read. It's a fun read. Anybody who cares about their Second Amendment rights, you're going to enjoy it. And it was particularly enjoyable for me because a lot of what Larry lays out very, very well, very logically, with a little bite to it, a little sarcasm, a little poking fun at some of the idiots who completely misportray what gun ownership is really all about in this country, and who keep raising the same tired bills and the same tired proposals, usually in response to a mass shooting like we've seen here a couple of times just in the last couple of weeks in California, saying, oh, well, if we just had, and then insert gun control proposal here, whether it's an assault weapon ban, high-capacity magazine ban, mandatory background checks, red flag laws, all those same battles that we fight over and over, Larry takes these apart one by one. And not only is it a direct rebuttal to a lot of the idiocy that we see coming from gun control proponents, it's actually a very nice, concise collection of the rebuttals to each one of those arguments. He also goes into other issues like a kind of a general description of the law of self-defense. Again, that was near and dear to my heart. If you listen to the Gun Guy Show, you know I teach a class, Essentials of Indiana Gun Law. I call it gun law because it goes well beyond the law of self-defense, but that is clearly the emphasis. And we talk about when you can and cannot use force, including deadly force, under Indiana law. That's a big part of my legal practice. As you know, I've represented multiple clients who have used force to defend themselves, defend others, lawfully and justifiably, often heroically. But a very nice again, more of a generic description. And as Larry clearly says in the book, he's not trying to give you legal advice as to your particular state, since laws vary a bit on issues like duty to retreat versus a stand your ground state, which specifically excludes any obligation to retreat before you use deadly force. So Larry acknowledges clearly that different states have different rules, but it's a very nice generic description. To go through that and keep those principles in mind and then get a detailed education on Indiana specifically would be a great way to go. But also, you know, what I get all the time, I get emails, I get calls to the show, I get Facebook messages, Twitter messages, whatnot, where people say, you know, my neighbor is a big gun control nut, and he says, blankety blank, what's the best way to respond to that? And who knows what the topic might be? An assault weapon ban is a consistent one. And I respond to a lot of those. I think oftentimes folks don't think I do anything all day but sit around waiting for someone to email me so I can translate information to them. And that's what the Gun Guy Show is largely all about. Having said that, I try to respond to those as much as possible, but Larry's book, again, In Defense of the Second Amendment, is a very concise, well-organized compilation that not only rebuts so many of those gun control proposals and gun control arguments, but does it in a really logical and entertaining way. And if I sound like a bit of a fanboy here, it's because I have become exactly that, having read this book. And we're going to take a little bit of an early break, because when we come back, we'll have Larry join us and talk about his book, what motivated him to write it, what he was trying to accomplish, and get into a little more detail on all those issues. So right now we're taking a break. By the way, throughout the show, we will, of course, take your calls as well. 317-239-9393. That's 317-239-9393. Right now we're taking a break. This is Guy Relford on The Gun Guy Show on 93 WIBC.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
One morning, you just walk in with a bag of everyone's faves from McDonald's, drop it on the counter, and say, breakfast is on me. Boom! That's the power of saving money on the McDonald's app. Hope you can handle all that. Save money with the app. At participating McDonald's, must opt into rewards.
And welcome back. I'm Guy Relford on The Gun Guy Show on 93 WIBC. We're thrilled you're with us. I'm even more thrilled to have Larry Correa, New York Times bestselling author, probably best known for, I think it's fair to say, our urban fantasy series called Monster Hunter International. Sold a lot of those, but he's published well over 20 novels, won multiple awards, mainly in the area of fiction, as I was mentioning before the break. But here just recently, just this week, Larry has released a nonfiction piece of work in the form of a book that I'm a big fan of. I just got my copy Thursday, and I tore through it, as I mentioned before the break. It was music to my ears. It's a lot of the same things you hear me talk about every week on The Gun Guy Show, and it was right here. It's in one location, and it completely blows out of the water a lot of the ridiculous arguments we hear over and over and over again from those folks out there who despise your Second Amendment rights and often despise us simply because we're gun owners and really have the agenda of simply trying to take our rights away. So first of all, welcome on the drivehubler.com hotline, Larry Correa. Thanks so much for joining us, Larry. And Larry, yeah, absolutely. We're glad you're with us. Is it fair to say, Larry, you're best known for the Monster Hunter International series?
Yeah, that's my biggest best-selling series, but I also do urban fantasy. I do also alternate history superheroes. I do thrillers. I do science fiction. I do a comedy series on Audible.
That's awesome.
I mean, I do A little bit of everything, actually. This is my first nonfiction, though. I'm really excited. It's been doing super good this week.
Well, good. And I hope it continues to do exactly that. I loved mine. I tore through it, as I just mentioned. But, you know, in defense of the Second Amendment, coming from Larry Correa, really shouldn't be a surprise if anybody knows about your background, because you've got a long history in the gun industry, former gun shop owner, and including having your SOT meaning you could deal with machine guns and suppressors and whatnot, as well as being a certified instructor, as I am, and a competitive shooter, whether that's IPSC, IDPA, et cetera, and all the above. So you've got the background as an instructor. You got the back of having trained thousands of people, as I have, in how to exercise their Second Amendment rights effectively and safely and responsibly and legally. So it shouldn't be a surprise you've come out with in defense of the Second Amendment. But tell us what it is in writing this and having it published, really, you were trying to accomplish.
Well, the goal was I wanted to be able to help the people who are already on my side articulate better arguments and arm them with facts, just kind of in one convenient place. And I didn't want to do like a dry academic, statistical kind of thing. I was going for just kind of a colloquial, just regular people having a conversation about the issue. And I also wrote it for, you know, not just people on our side already, but people who are kind of on the fence. This is the book to, like, give to your spouse who won't let you have a gun in the house, you know?
Yeah.
I run into that a lot.
I do, too. I get that call often. That's the reason I chuckle. You know, what I get all the time is I have people contact me and say, "Guy, you know, you did a show a month ago or 3 months ago or whatever it might be, and you completely rebutted this argument of why there should be an assault weapon ban or why red flag laws are useful to society." And man, I'm going back through your shows and I can't find it. You know, can you point me to that? I got to tell you, I mean, I love it when people go back and listen to my podcast, but I'm not so sure I'm not from now on just going to say, "Man, you need to check out pages 42 through 62 in Larry Correa's book," because you really lay it all out right here in one spot.
I do, yeah. And it's just because I've been involved in this for about 30 years now. I got into this when I was young and, you know, a young, excitable gun nut. And I've heard the same arguments the whole time, like as you have and as we all have. They just keep bringing up the same tired stuff. Every now and then there's something new. Every few years they'll come up with some new thing that they'll regurgitate. So I just wanted to, like, have a handy guide to all of them. And so basically I would outline, like, what they're pitching. And then I would go through, like, how it fails logically, how it's failed historically, how it really works in real life, and just kind of, like, pick it apart. And I'm pretty sarcastic. I mean, it comes from being a fiction writer. I mean, I'm not an academic. But here's the thing. I made sure that every single thing I said in there is sourced, cited. It was all fact-checked. The fact-checker did a stupendous job. And then the publishing house, the attorneys, went over it to make sure everything I said legally was correct.
Yep.
Because, you know, there's a lot of pressure there, because I want to be able to give people good information. I don't want to give people bad info that's going to get them refuted. But it's been interesting to me. So the book's been out this week, and I'm getting these one-star reviews from people who clearly haven't read it. And the reviews are just like the same tired stuff. And it's so funny because it's like they didn't read the book to review it. And it's like, "Ha, I got you. I specifically talked about that and showed why you're wrong." It's because the people that are the anti-gun, like hardcore advocates, they're kind of profoundly dishonest, and they just kind of run with this narrative regardless of what the actual facts are. So I actually had a lot of fun with it, kind of going through and just poking holes in all their arguments and rebutting all this stuff. So I hope it's useful for people. I hope people get some good use out of this.
Well, I do this for a living, and I've been a Second Amendment attorney for a long, long time, practicing law this year, 40 years. And it's useful to me because of how it's a concise collection of multiple well-thought-out logical arguments. Yeah, is there a little wit and a little sarcasm and poking fun at some of the idiotic arguments we see against us? Of course. But that's what makes it entertaining. And that doesn't detract from the logic at all and the factual support for what it is that you lay out here. So, again, I said before the break, you probably didn't hear, but by introducing you, I said if I sound like a bit of a fanboy for this, this book, it's only because I am, because I love the collection of useful arguments right here in one spot, and that's why I think it's useful for any gun owner. And I'm hoping that with some of these silly reviews, I've seen some, and some you've talked about on social media, and I went and looked. What's fascinating to me, I saw one, probably the most vitriolic review that I saw. Clearly someone read two pages of the foreword and didn't get much farther and on that basis wrote a review. And I started laughing because they clearly hadn't gotten into the substance. And by the way, Nick Searcy, people probably know he played Waylon Givens' boss on the great series Justified. And by all accounts, just a really good guy. He wrote you a hell of a foreword and well deserved, but clearly somebody hadn't gotten into the substance of the book whatsoever. They just decided any book called In Defense of the Second Amendment has got to be laid waste to on every opportunity.
Yeah, it was just it was so funny to me because it's such a microcosm of the same debate where anything happens in the news, they got the narrative in advance, regardless of the facts, they have the narrative, and it's so funny to me how they do that. And the fact that you like this book so much, to me, is great because you've been putting in the work. You are one of the footnotes in the book.
I am. It was awesome. I saw something that was related to the Greenwood Park Mall shooting where I actually represent the gentleman who was the hero who saved who knows how many lives, countless lives, by taking out a bad guy. And I read something that looked familiar in terms of some of the facts behind that shooting. And then I saw there was a footnote, and I said, well, Larry got this exactly right. So whatever his source is and whatever the basis of this information is, I clearly got it right as well. And so I flipped back to the back to see what the footnote read, and it was me. So I got a big kick out of that. So you enjoy a book when you're excited about even being in a damn footnote.
Yeah, I spent almost as much time writing the book as I did putting together the data. So I like having those footnotes. Like I said, it's like 13 pages of small print. I cite everything I can think of, and then the fact checkers, well, they would go through and they're like, well, you make this assertion on this page. Do you have evidence for that? And it was a lot of stuff that, as a gun guy, I've been doing this my whole life, I would just take for granted. It's like, everybody knows that, right?
Yeah.
And so that wasn't good enough. And so, by golly, if it's in there and it's a thing that we take for granted, I will show you where to look that up. And it was a lot of fun putting it together. And I kind of lucked out because how this all came to be was it was because of the Bruin decision was pending.
Yeah, you bet.
It was looming. And one of the editors at Regnery, the nonfiction publishing house, he had worked with me on the fiction side of the thing, and Regnery wanted to get out a comprehensive, guidebook to the Second Amendment debate and, a help guide. And they said, who do we know who, A, is a really good writer, an experienced writer who can get this book out quickly, and, B, really knows guns? And Tony Daniel, the editor, was like, oh, guys, I've got the perfect guy. And I would have did this for free. Don't tell the publisher that. But this is something I've been passionate about forever. So I'm just glad to get it out there and get it into people's hands and get it to be a tool in the debate. So I'm really pumped.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, one of my thoughts upon finishing the book and setting it down is that And this would be a nice bump for sales as well. But my first thought is that somebody ought to start a GoFundMe or some kind of a collection out there to where we could purchase 500 and some odd copies of this and send them to every single member in the House of Representatives and the Senate and in Washington. And of course, we know a big chunk of those are going to throw it straight in the trash. But for anybody interested in actual facts and logic when it comes to the gun control debate, this is exactly that. And I would love the idea that some number of politicians in Washington, and in particular those that are on our side to a large degree anyway, could be armed with these kind of arguments. Because we don't hear enough of exactly that coming from our elected officials.
That would be really nice. And it's interesting, too, because I try real hard in the book not to get too political. And I can't say I didn't get political because it's clearly a political debate. But I don't want to be too much this side good, this side evil. except the problem is I actually had some liberal gun owners who were a little mad at me because they think, well, you paint with a broad brush. And I was like, well, when 99 point something, you know, of your elected representatives are anti-gun and a pro-gun elected Democrat in Congress is, you know, seen more rarely than Bigfoot, I can't, you know, put that caveat every single time I'm talking about actual political activity. But I do call out the Republicans, too, specifically like when I get to the section on red flag laws, because that was the most, at the time of writing this, that was the most recent legislative action. We had a lot of Republican senators go along with the red flag funding and just completely missing the point of all the different ways it could be abused, all the different ways it could be used to take away people's constitutional rights with no due process. And it was... it was just really sad to see that. So I try to be fair, and I try to call out bad decision-making on both sides. And then I have no mercy for the people who are, like, the willfully dishonest, destructive. I in the book, I refer to them as the vultures.
Yes.
And so not all anti-gun people are vultures. But when I talk about the vultures, it's the people that are, like, perched, waiting for carnage.
Yes.
And then when there's blood, they swoop in. And on those people, I have no mercy. And I call out many by name, and I provide a lot of examples of the stuff they do. And speaking in Greenwood Park Mall, I specifically talked about Shannon Watts' reaction to that event. Because they were sad. They were upset on Twitter that there hadn't been enough death and destruction. And even some of them, I quoted them in the book, and they were upset that, well, this kid took a gun to the mall. So who's the real bad guy? Didn't
right.
they both take guns to the mall? It blew me away. It was so crazy.
Yeah. You know, I took on Shannon Watts on Twitter, that led her to delete one particular tweet, that I think you actually mentioned in the book. And that is, she had said, basically, it's a sad day in America. And I'm paraphrasing. It's a sad day in America when the gun nuts are actually excited about a 22-year-old illegally taking a gun to a mall and engaged in a shooting only after three innocent people died. And so she's talking about, you know, heroism and putting Eli Dickin putting himself in harm's way to save who knows how many lives. Bad guy had over 100 rounds in rifle magazines on him when that threat was stopped. And it was a sad day in America because Eli Dickin saved countless lives, and she only wanted to focus on the fact that he had a gun in the mall. And as you say specifically in the book, in Indiana and many other places, they can have a no-gun policy all they want, just like they can have a no-mask policy or a no-shirt, no-shoes, no-service policy. You violate their policy, they can ask you to leave. If you leave, it's no harm, no foul. But you don't break a law by ignoring a no-gun policy. So she said, you know, illegally carrying a gun in the mall. And I responded directly to her, and I said, let me explain a legal concept called defamation per se. Defamation per se is falsely accusing someone of a crime. Eli Dickin committed no crime in Indiana. I'm his lawyer. You may want to reconsider leaving this on your Twitter feed. And poof, about 20 seconds later, it disappeared.
Yeah, that is doing community service right there. That is some... I mean, that's quality that you got her to take that down.
Go ahead, Larry. I'm sorry.
I was just saying, I was just so blown away by the attitude of this. And I've seen it over and over, and everybody who's involved in this has seen it over and over. I mean, I've got one of the openings. I talk about the visceral reaction we all have now because we've been conditioned to this. That there's an event on the news, and we know even before there's any facts of the case available, we're getting blamed. We saw it this week. So during the week my book came out, I've been on a ton of radio interviews, and I was watching this kind of unfold in real time. So we have these events in California. Immediately, they take to the news, the vultures. You know, Adam Schiff, there's a perfect example. He gets on there, and he starts talking about how this is clearly, you know, bigotry, or I need to say clearly. I'm paraphrasing also. I don't want to, like, you know, say anything defamatory here. But basically, it was dancing in the blood that, like, this shows that there's bigotry against Asians, and this shows why we need an assault weapons ban, and so on and so forth. It's just the same old, because they already have all the stuff in plan. Anything that they propose when emotions are high, it's already been planned. And it has, you know, the laws are already, they're already written. They're ready to roll out in case of a sufficient tragedy to get enough people emotional. So none of these are ever written in a way to, like, actually deal with that particular event. But then as it came out, everything I predicted in the book about the pattern they follow, they followed.
Yep.
So events change. The information comes out. It doesn't fit their narrative. The shooter wasn't a, you know, white Trump voter. And the weapon he used has been illegal in California since, I think the 90s.
Yeah, right, exactly.
And so the guy's had this, you know, gun that's been illegal in that state for 30 years. He used it. And so everything was wrong. But it doesn't matter. They never. It's not really like they go back and they retract and say, "Oh, sorry, we're wrong. We insulted the integrity and honor and decency of half the country. We apologize for our mistake." No, they never do that. They just double down, and then they wait for the next one and the next one. And they, if the event fits their narrative, then by golly, it's going to be flogged in the news for months on end. It'll dominate the news cycle because it's all about just getting some mileage out of it for them.
Well, precisely right. And, you know, and one thing that I was borderline shocked to see, and it really was an issue that you raise and discuss in the book as well, but the New York Times actually called me about a week ago, and the reporter, a guy named Serge Kovaleski, and he called me and he said, "Hey guy, you know, I understand you represent Eli Dickin, the hero in Greenwood, and you know, we went on from there." But he asked me a series of questions, and the premise behind his questions were all, does it appear that more and more people are willing to take on the role of standing up and protecting themselves and others? And the context was mass shootings, but obviously it's broader than that. When we see now multiple instances of heroic bystanders stepping up and saving lives, he wanted to know if I thought that was going to lead to more and more people carrying guns and being willing to step in to that role. But even the fact that the New York Times was asking me that question was something that about made my jaw hit the floor. The article came out, and I don't know if you've seen it, but, and of course they disregard 99% of what I said. And most specifically, I made a point that you make in your book, which is talking about the most recent California situation and where an unarmed bystander actually helped wrestle the gun away from this guy. But in the context of the California shooting, they had Shannon Watts quoted in there saying, "Oh, well, of course we need more gun control and we need this ban and we need that ban." The guy came back to me and asked me, and I said, "You know, we're talking about California, right? And we're talking about California is an absolute cornucopia of gun control. There's nothing on Shannon Watts' most fond wish list that California hadn't already done. You name it: mandatory background checks on private sales, red flag laws, assault weapon ban, high capacity magazine ban. The complete wish list for any gun control proponent they already have in California. What one more law would have made a difference in California?" And the guy, wow, that's a really good point. He actually wrote up his notes from our conversation and sent them to me, and he got everything right. It was dead on. I go, "Yep, that's good, awesome." And then as soon as I put the phone down from responding to him, I went, "I can't believe the New York Times is actually going to publish that point." And guess what? They sure as hell did not. He wrote it into the article and then told me his editors trashed it all. And he like one line from me that was very much window dressing. But the fact that the New York Times published that article that proposed the idea that more and more people are willing to step up and defend themselves and others and being willing to carry a gun after seeing heroes save lives in potential mass shootings was shocking to me that we saw that from that publication.
Yeah, I think it's fantastic because I do think, like I've talked about this, is we are winning the culture war. And every time there's an instance like that where, you know, the proverbial good guy with a gun, the vultures always say, well, the good guy with a gun is a myth.
Right.
But then we trot out example after example after example. And I go into the book, you know, a lot of different types of crime, but I mean, I spend a lot, inordinate amount of time statistically on the mass shootings, just because those are the ones that, you know, grab the headlines and they get talked a lot about. But as you know, it always comes down to a violent response, and that violent response can either be immediate because somebody who's already there, or that violent response could be from when the cops come in 15 minutes or an hour and a half in the case of Uvalde or whatever. It takes time.
Yeah.
And so if you get somebody there, it's just simple logistics. And a lot of people have kind of glommed onto that. You know, 2020 was the year that everybody was like first time buyers of guns skyrocketed across all demographics. And it was all because of people watching the breakdown of the system that they had faith in, that they think, okay, I don't need a gun. I'll just call 911. Cops will come save me. 2020 rolls around, cities are on fire. People are calling 911, and the cops are like, well, you know, good luck. You're on your own. We can't come. And that's why we had this just explosion of gun purchasing.
We absolutely did. And yeah, and as I've been saying for years on the mass shooting issue, the timing and duration of a mass shooting is always directly dependent on when the second gun arrives. And you lay out that in a lot of detail in the book. Larry, I have blown way past the bottom of the hour. I've got producer Carl giving me the evil eye over here, but I just can't get enough of this discussion. Book is outstanding. Thanks so much for coming on the Gun Guy Show here this evening.
Well, thanks, Guy. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
All righty. All right, we're taking a break. This is Guy Relford on the Gun Guy Show on 93 WIBC.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
One morning, you just walk in with a bag of everyone's faves from McDonald's, drop it on the counter, and say, breakfast is on me. Boom! That's the power of saving money on the McDonald's app. Hope you can handle all that. Save money with the app. At participating McDonald's, must opt into rewards.
And welcome back. I'm Guy Relford on the Gun Guy Show on 93 WIBC. Thanks again to Larry Correa for coming on the show. I'm excited about this book. I'm excited about having it out there. I'm excited about it being a resource to those of us who get engaged in the Second Amendment debate. And it really is an outstanding piece of work. We're going to shift the focus to talk a little bit more about Indiana. And in fact, coming up a little after the break at 6, I'm going to have my friend Chris Lee from NSSF. NSSF is the National Shooting Sports Foundation. And that really is the organization representing the gun industry on a national basis. You know, a lot of times, you know, folks out there criticizing NRAs, well, NRA is just a mouthpiece for people trying to sell guns. Well, not really. NRA is the grassroots organization, and membership is primarily made up of individuals. NSSF is the industry organization, representing not just gun manufacturers, but gun retail stores and other organizations like shooting ranges and others that have businesses associated with the exercise of Second Amendment rights. Chris and I both testified in favor of a bill here this last week. And it's an interesting bill. It's not as broad as I would like to see it, but it has some advantages. But the NSSF does a great job of being an advocate for the Second Amendment related businesses out there that are its members. They put on the SHOT Show. If you haven't been to that, again, it's primarily for members of the industry. So you have to have that connection to go out there. But it's in Vegas every year. It just wrapped up. A lot of my friends and colleagues were out there having a great time checking out all the new releases, new technology, new products. Interestingly enough, the ATF had a booth at SHOT Show, and they had that on their Facebook page. And so the ATF said, you know, hey, check us out. Come, you know, stop by and say hi to the ATF at SHOT Show. And their booth, I got to tell you, you go find this on Facebook. Just go to the ATF page. You'll have to scroll down a little bit because it was at the beginning of the show here about a week ago. But their booth display had this huge face of who was apparently Elliot Ness, the old G-Man. But it's just this huge close-up of his face, and it talked about the legacy of federal law enforcement. But it was so reminiscent of the scene from 1984, where the guy on the big video screen—it's a real close-up of his face, and you know, and he's lecturing, you know, comply, comply, you know, obey, obey, and it looked just like that. In fact, I posted an image of that in a response to their Facebook post. But what I got the most responses to was I actually posted in response to them saying they were going to be at SHOT Show, which again is a lot of fun. It's in Vegas, and it's a great gathering of folks of like minds. Primarily, the ATF was going too, and I said, man, this kind of reminds me of your ex-wife coming to your bachelor party. And I got hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands of likes on that, which was a lot of fun. I'll tell you, we got a short segment. We're taking a break. We'll be back with another very short segment. But I got to tell you, the priority here this first hour was having Larry Correa on. I hope you enjoyed that. We'll be right back. This is Guy Relford on The Gun Guy Show on 93 WIBC. And welcome back for another very short segment here. But hey, that's quite all right. Tell you what, let's go to the fun lines. Our buddy Buzz has called in. Buzz, what do you got for us?
Hey, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Thursday, you were talking about Governor Noem having one of her administrative agencies write up a couple of bills that they took straight to the floor and they got voted on.
Yeah.
Okay. Isn't that exactly what we don't want the ATF or someone like that to start getting into the habit of doing?
Oh, I actually completely disagree, Buzz. And I know it's a question, but to the extent it's a rhetorical question, the idea that what ATF would try to do to restrict our rights, like let's talk about this ridiculous brace, pistol brace ruling they put out. They do that through administrative rulemaking. And through their administrative rulemaking, which doesn't require any votes in Congress, they can make you and I felons. And they shouldn't be able to, and it's going to be challenged in court, and it may likely be successfully challenged. But the idea that they would back off of administrative rulemaking, which they can do by executive fiat, they can do completely unilaterally. And the idea they would move away from that and say, no, these are things that really require a vote in Congress and propose bills in Congress that Congress would have to vote to approve. That'd be a hell of a lot better than the situation we find ourselves in now, because they can submit bills all they want to. Congress still has to vote them up or down. And that's why, you know, people were upset about Kristi Noem having one of her executive agencies write up a bill that reduced taxes in South Dakota. One of the reasons I'm a Kristi Noem fan. They were reducing taxes for taxpayers in South Dakota. The agency wrote it up and they got a vote in the legislature in South Dakota, and the legislators had to vote for it. I'm fine with that. They can propose whatever they propose if Congress has to pass it before it can put you and me in prison. That's a hell of a lot better than ATF just snapping its fingers and being able to put us in jail for 10 years. Tell you what, at the top of the hour, it's time to take a break. We'll be right back. This is Guy Relford on The Gun Guy Show on 93 WIBC. And welcome back for hour number two of the Gun Guy Show here on 93 WIBC. We're thrilled you're with us. And as I mentioned last week and the week before, we are right in the middle of the legislative session here in Indiana. Somewhat early stages. It is a budget year, so the session's a little longer than usual. And obviously, budget issues will command a lot of that time. But as usual, really, just like every year, we're playing both offense and defense in the Indiana General Assembly. You know, last year we had constitutional carry take up an awful lot of time and attention and focus. Lord knows I spent an incredible large number of hours, a whole bunch of time in the General Assembly fighting for constitutional carry, and we eventually got that done. And a lot of folks, I think, kind of expected us to take a year off, but oh hell no, there's too much going on in particular to play defense on, but also there are some pro two-way bills out there as well. And I'm very pleased to have join us on the show my friend Chris Lee. I've known Chris for quite a while. Chris is with the National Shooting Sports Foundation, and I've worked with Chris on a number of legislative issues. And Chris, first of all, welcome to the Gun Guy Show, buddy. Welcome back, I should say. Not your first rodeo.
No, it's good to be here. Thanks for having me, Guy. It was good to see you at the State House this week.
Yeah, absolutely. So, first of all, for people who aren't familiar, what is the NSSF and what really is the mission of NSSF?
Right. So, NSSF is the firearm industry trade association across the country. We represent about 10,000 member firearm industry businesses. So that's everything from, you know, the big manufacturers like Smith & Wesson down to your local gun shops, your local ranges, even firearm media is included in our membership. We also are the owner of SHOT Show. So I'm sure a lot of your listeners are aware of SHOT Show. It's where a lot of new products are unveiled each year. It wrapped up, actually, SHOT Show wrapped up last week out in Las Vegas. We're one of the five largest trade shows out there in Vegas, and this was the largest SHOT Show ever. So it's good to see all the new products and a lot of our industry members. But the way we really differ from other gun groups that people typically think of is that we represent gun business, whereas other gun groups, firearm rights groups, represent gun owners. That's the big difference.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of funny. I've gotten given myself a chuckle now and then when, you know, I'll be talking or debating some anti-gun people, and they'll say, "Well, you're a member of the NRA, and NRA is just a mouthpiece for the business trying to sell guns." I go, "No, that's NSSF." But to the extent you represent the retailers and manufacturers, obviously that is a big part of it. And Lord knows that's an industry that has been under constant attack from a variety of sources, including in legislatures across the country and including in Congress. The gun industry needs a strong industry organization like NSSF, and I'm thrilled they're out there, and I'm thrilled with the job they've done. What are some of the priorities, if you look across the whole landscape? And I know you've got legislative responsibilities here in Indiana and elsewhere, but when you look across the landscape out there, what are some priorities that NSSF is looking at right now?
Right. So NSSF has a great federal team in D.C. working on behalf of the industry every day, but I only handle state legislative affairs, so I'm gonna stick to talking about the state issues that we're working on. And just so everyone knows, I cover 8 states throughout the Midwest, but I'm a native Hoosier, love Indiana, and I worked for Congresswoman Walorski up in northern Indiana for 5 years.
Oh, wow.
So know Indiana very well. And of course, this past year was a difficult one with Congresswoman Walorski's, car accident, tragic accident.
Exactly.
Anyway, it's a privilege now to represent the firearm industry. I've been in this role since about 2019. And the issue that I really want to focus on today is dealing with discrimination against the firearm industry. And that's something that we've been working on the last 3 years across the country. But there are other issues that we're working on right now. A big one right now you've probably seen is that a lot of these very far left states are trying to pass laws that would allow individuals to sue the firearm industry directly. So we have a federal liability shield called the Protection of Lawful Commerce and Arms Act. And a lot of states, unfortunately, are trying to, they think that they know a way around that. They think they know a way to go after that liability shield and allow individuals to sue the firearm industry every time there's a shooting, even if we acted lawfully through the entire purchase of the firearm. So that's a big deal for us, is pushing back on those attacks and also working in states to pass state liability shields like Indiana already has. So that's a big priority that we're working on. Another one is passing emergency power protections to make sure that in cases like COVID, governors like Governor Whitmer up in Michigan can't go around and shut down gun shops during an emergency. So we were happy to work with some partners in Ohio to get emergency power protections in place this past session. So that was a big victory. And really, those are the two big ones that I'm working on here in the Midwest. But like I said, right now, our focus has to be pushing back on this discrimination that the industry is facing. I don't know if you talked about it at all on earlier in your show, so let me know how far back you want me to go. But
oh no,
discrimination.
You're right where we want you to be, Chris, because that's exactly what I want to talk about. You and I both testified in favor of House Bill, I believe it was 1008. Brought by Representatives Manning and Speedy, who are the chair and co-chair of the Finance Committee, and that which works nicely since that's where the bill was heard, and they were the author and co-author on the bill as well. But you and I both testified in favor of that. What and obviously this is a bill that NSSF supports, the gun industry supports. What is it that we're trying to accomplish with House Bill 1008?
Right. So back about a decade ago now, 11 years ago, the Obama administration really worked with the Justice Department to encourage banks to cut off services to the firearm industry. And it took a little while for that to take off. But in about 2016, 2017, we started to have big banks shut down services to the firearm industry. And some of the big ones like Citigroup from the beginning, they worked to recruit other banks and worked to recruit other industries to join them in shutting down services to the firearm industry. So, you know, they weren't banning magazines and they weren't banning modern sporting rifles in Congress. So they said, we're gonna ban them on our own using our money and influence in the market. So anyway, today the firearm industry is discriminated against by credit processors, banks, insurance providers, and most recently, in this past July, we had 10 trucking companies shut down services to the firearm industry after Senate Democrats wrote a letter just encouraging them to shut down services to the firearm industry. And it's not just guns that they're not shipping now. It's firearm parts, ammunition, firearm accessories. So just to give you a couple examples, Apple Pay says you can't incorporate Apple Pay into any website that sells firearms, weapons, or ammunition. Citigroup will require that people that work with them do not sell firearms to someone who hasn't passed a background check. Okay, and they restrict. They want the firearm industry to restrict the sale of firearms for individuals under the age of 21, even when that's legal with certain types of firearms. And Citigroup won't allow the firearm industry working with them to sell what they call high capacity magazines, but it ends up just being pretty much any magazine, which are legal in most states. Old Dominion Freight says we will not accept firearm component parts for shipping. And Square says that you can't use Square to process firearm parts or hardware or ammunition purchases. So this goes on. I mean, that's four examples, but the list, unfortunately, we're up to where really you can't keep track of the list. We got to the point where there were dozens on the list, and now it's you can't keep track of it. There's new companies every day boycotting the firearm industry and the Second Amendment. In America, it's a big issue. So we, as an industry, said we have to push back on this. And one way we wanted to do that, we called it the Firearm Industry Non-Discrimination Act, the FIND Act. And we ran that bill working with legislative partners in a lot of states last couple of years. And essentially all that bill said was, if you are a company that boycotts the firearm industry and the Second Amendment, then we as a state will not give contracts to you. So these companies do a lot of business for the state. States have a lot of money and they do a lot of business with companies. So it's a way of saying, you can continue to have your discriminatory policies if you want, no matter how wrong they are. But if you are discriminating against the Second Amendment with your company policies, then we as a state aren't going to do business with you. You're not going to take taxpayer dollars through contracts any longer. And Texas passed that law actually a year and a half ago. And a lot of banks had to step away from state business. But Citigroup, who, like I said, is like the original, one of the original boycotters of the firearm industry, they said, oh, no, we're in compliance with this law. And we had a big victory a week ago when the attorney general in Texas concluded an investigation and said, yes, you do boycott the firearm industry. The state will no longer do business with you. So that was our original FIND Act. And I know, Guy, you remember you testified on that. We had that bill in Indiana last year. Yeah. A lot of the focus was on constitutional carry. So that bill did not go anywhere, unfortunately. But we noticed last year that there were a lot of similar bills being introduced for other industries like the fossil fuel industry. So what we think, we're on special footing because we're the only industry necessary to a constitutional right. Energy security is important. Border security is important. Food security is important. And right now we see fossil fuel industry. We see the private border security companies being discriminated against by people that want open borders. We see animal agriculture being discriminated against by big companies that are being pressured by groups like PETA and HSUS. So anyway, we formed a coalition with these other groups and created we're just calling it the anti-ESG bill. And I've seen there's been over 70 anti-ESG bills introduced across the country in the last 3 weeks. So big movement right now, pushing back on ESG. And Guy, if you think, do you want to explain what ESG is, or do you want me to go into that?
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm going to go into that maybe a little bit after the break, Chris. Unfortunately, I'm okay. up against a break I need to take, but yep. I'll get into that a little bit. But last question before we let you go is, what do you think the prospects are for this year's bill?
So this year's bill is a little bit different in that it doesn't deal with state contracts. It deals with state investments. And this is specific to Indiana. A lot of states are going after contracts. But this bill says if you boycott one of those industries that I just mentioned and you're managing a large fund. So we see BlackRock, Vanguard, some of these big fund managers who actually are majority owner of the majority of the S&P 500. We see them pushing down these policies and boycotting the firearm industry. So all this bill says is that if you are a fund manager managing state investments, which is worth billions of dollars, Indiana's investments are worth billions of dollars. If you're a fund manager and you're pushing ESG over making money for the state of Indiana and Indiana taxpayers, then Indiana will no longer allow you to manage their money, and Indiana will no longer invest in you. So it's kind of a little bit more of an indirect way to push back on these discriminatory policies than the contract bill might have been. But we're extremely supportive. We appreciate Representative Manning and Representative Speedy's leadership on this issue. And it's a great way to push down really, you know, at the top, push down on these ESG policies that are anti-American and anti-Hoosier.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, before we let you go, let's just define that term. What's ESG stand for?
Right. So the E stands for environmental. So that would mean you're not going to do business with oil and gas companies any longer. The S would stand for social. And that could, you know, mean that you're not going to do business with companies that push transgender activism or pro-abortion policies or that's where the firearm industry would fall under. The mm-hmm. firearm discrimination would fall under social. So I would say if you are part of the firearm industry, we're going to not do business with you. And then governance can mean things like employee race quotas and social credit scores, things like that. So ESG, environmental, social, governance is what it stands for.
And the way I've summarized that, Chris, is essentially their liberal woke policies. It's kind
exactly.
of in a nutshell. Well, I'll tell you what, I've blown past the quarter hour, Chris, but I'm a big supporter of you and of NSSF. I was pleased to be there to also support the bill. I'll talk a little bit more about that after the break. But thanks so much for calling in and joining us here on the Gun Guy Show.
Thanks for having me. Have a great weekend.
Absolutely. All right, we are taking a break. This is Guy Relford on The Gun Guy Show on 93 WIBC.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
One morning, you just walk in with a bag of everyone's faves from McDonald's, drop it on the counter, and say, breakfast is on me. Boom! That's the power of saving money on the McDonald's app. Hope you can handle all that. Save money with the app. At participating McDonald's, must opt into rewards.
And welcome back. I'm Guy Relford on The Gun Guy Show on 93 WIBC. Thanks again to Chris Lee for calling in, talking about the good work NSSF is doing. That's the National Shooting Sports Foundation. And the bill that he and I both testified in favor of really deals with discrimination by the financial industry against gun-related businesses. It's broader than that, as he went into, and some other industries like fossil fuels that are getting targeted by these woke policies. And for that reason, it's a solid bill. What I like about it was kind of interesting because one of the Democrats, when I testified in favor of this bill, one of the Democrats on the Finance Committee asked me, thinking he had a good gotcha. He said, "Well, would you say you're a supporter of the free enterprise system? Would you say you're a supporter of independent businesses being able to conduct their business without government intrusion?" Aha. Is he figured he had me one way or the other there. And I said, "I absolutely am. I'm very much in favor of free enterprise and the idea of keeping government out of the business and out of the pocket of private businesses as much as possible. But I have no problem reconciling that with this particular bill, because it's not government telling a business how to function. It's not even telling businesses to not discriminate against the firearm industry, as well as some of these other targeted industries. It's saying, you do business, Mr. Financial Institution, however you'd like to do business, make your own decisions. But where you are making financial decisions based on these woke liberal policies, the state of Indiana will simply not reward you by doing business with you, in particular in hiring you to manage a whole bunch of the state's money in the form of a pension plan and various pension plans that the state of Indiana has for state employees. It's a whole billions of dollars we're talking about. So it's do what you want to do. And that's exactly what I said. I said, you can conduct your business however you want to conduct it. But we're creating one additional criterion that you may want to consider in deciding whether you're going to have these woke policies that cause you then to discriminate against a lawful business or several. And he just sort of looked disappointed and nodded and didn't follow up, because that's exactly the way I approach it. It's not the state of Indiana telling anybody what to do in terms of how to conduct their business. But the degree of discrimination, and the reason that I like the broader bill we had last year better, this is a good starting point, House Bill 1008 this year. But I like the broader bill we've had the last 2 years that we couldn't get out of the Senate Banking and Finance Committee, then chaired by Senator Andy Zay. The reason I like the broader bill better is it went on to say that if you have these discriminatory practices, the state of Indiana will not reward you by entering into any contracts with you, including, for instance, you doing the credit card processing when people want to use a credit card to some for some payment to the state, and pay for your license plates, by way of example. It was much broader and more impactful, and it went to credit card processors as well as retail bankers. And let me tell you why I was so motivated to do that. Is if you recall, it's probably been a couple of years now. Well, in fact, it was still during COVID. And I had what we're going to have again here in a couple of weeks. I called it the Gun Shop Roundtable, and I had five owners of gun shops, who all were friends of mine, but you know, folks I've worked with, folks I've shopped with, and folks I support, in some cases folks I advertise for. And we had them all in here in the studio. We had every microphone filled up, and these were all owners of gun shops. And I was talking about, you know, what they're seeing in their industry, what challenges they were facing running a gun store. And this was as COVID was still ongoing and all the challenges associated with supply chain. I mean, you remember what it was like trying to find ammunition during COVID? It was damn hard. They just didn't have it. When retailers had a little bit of ammo, a lot of them were holding it back and only selling it to folks who were also buying a gun. Why? Because they didn't want to sell people guns that they couldn't load, that they couldn't put ammo in. My friends at Indy Arms told me that their range business dropped off dramatically because people either didn't have ammo, couldn't find ammo, or didn't want to shoot the ammo they had. So the firing range there, they have both a pistol and a rifle range. I've shot there many, many times. I've taught a heck of a lot of classes there. It completely fell off. So I'm thinking, you know, we're talking about challenges relating to COVID, both for firearm supply, ammunition supply, prices, because when there's very little of something, whether it's gun, ammo, other accessories or whatnot, when there's very little of something, what happens to the price? That's just basic economics, supply and demand. So we're talking through those issues with this roundtable. At one point I said, you know what? I've had something happen to me where credit card processors will not do business with me simply because I'm a firearms instructor. Oh no, we don't want to do any business with and this is a quote I got from one credit card processor that said, we don't want to do business with anyone, you know, associated with a company connected to gun violence. They said that about me selling my book, Gun Safety and Cleaning for Dummies. Gun Safety and Cleaning for Dummies. It's a book on how people can safely handle and store their firearms. It's trying to keep people safe. And they associate that with gun violence? Are you kidding me? But anyway, during the roundtable, when I had the five gun shop owners sitting here, I said, who here has had a problem being discriminated against by a bank or a credit card company? And all five hands shot up. And then, and they commenced then, all five of them, to tell their horror stories. One gentleman said he had three different banks just close his accounts. Just close them. Sent him a certified letter with checks for the balances saying your account's closed, we don't want to do business with you anymore. Credit card processors over and over. Now they're running into problems with shipping companies, as you heard Chris Lee from NSSF mention. So it is a real issue. This bill this year, House Bill 1008, isn't as broad as we would like to have it. But it's definitely a start, and I strongly commend Representative Speedy and Manning for pushing this. And for having what I thought was a very productive hearing on the bill last week. It has not been voted on in committee yet, and they're going to consider some amendments potentially. I actually asked them to consider an amendment to broaden it to include retail banking and credit card processing. And they kind of looked at each other, a couple of them did, like they might be interested. I'm not sure that we can get it pushed that far, but that was the bill the last couple of years. I'd like to see this bill amended to do exactly the same thing. In the meantime, it's time to take a break. We'll be right back. We're going to continue to take your calls, 317-239-9393. You want to talk about what's going on in the legislature? You want to talk about what's going on at ATF or in Congress? Give us a call. You can ask those questions or others, 317-239-9393. We'll be right back. This is Guy Relford on The Gun Guy Show on 93 WIBC.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
One morning, you just walk in with a bag of everyone's faves from McDonald's, drop it on the counter, and say, breakfast is on me. Boom! That's the power of saving money on the McDonald's app. Hope you can handle all that. Save money with the app. At participating McDonald's, must opt into rewards.
And welcome back. I'm Guy Relford on The Gun Guy Show on 93 WIBC. So we have a whole series of completely idiotic bills introduced. I'll be talking more about those in future shows, but there are some positive ones as well, including, and I hope to even have new representative Craig Haggard, guy I've known for a long time, used to actually work for NRA, and he and I worked together closely when he was in that capacity, but he is now a representative. He just elected this year. We've had him on the show before, but he has a House bill, 1323. We're going to talk a little bit about that. It's designed to protect your information that's held by the Indiana State Police to the extent that you have an Indiana license to carry handgun. That's important. That's solid. And it specifically puts restrictions on when any of that information can be released to federal agencies who may very likely want it for nefarious purposes, or at least purposes that you and I wouldn't necessarily trust. Craig's introduced that bill. It's a solid bill. We're going to talk more about that here in just a bit. But there are others. You know, we've had a self-defense bill that would change a ridiculous rule that we have in Indiana. And that is that if I'm standing in front of my business, for instance, just one example, in the middle of a riot, because we had this happen. If I'm in front of my business in the middle of a riot and somebody walks up to firebomb my business, walking up with a lit Molotov cocktail, and their intent obviously is to throw that through the window of my business, destroy my business, destroy my livelihood. If they're only threatening my business, they're not directly threatening me or another person. In Indiana, if I point my gun at them, I don't shoot them, I just point my gun at them, and say, no, you're not going to destroy my business because of one particular court decision we have in Indiana that says you can never use deadly force merely to protect your property. I'm not talking about your home. I'm talking about your other property besides your home. You can never use deadly force to protect mere property, and that pointing a gun constitutes the use of deadly force, according to the Indiana Court of Appeals. So pointing my gun to protect my property puts me in prison for a felony in Indiana, particularly when I'm just trying to defend my property like my business. That's ridiculous. That's nuts. Jim Lucas is running a bill that would fix that. And it would define reasonable force that you can use to protect your property to include the pointing of a loaded or unloaded gun. Yeah, we can discuss tactics and strategy and what's smart and what's not smart, because I still can't shoot them if they're only threatening my property and not my health and safety or anyone else. So the question becomes, do you really want to be pointing guns at people that you can't shoot? But that's not the point with respect to this bill. The point is that if I do that and I decide that's a sound decision under the circumstances, for whatever reason, I shouldn't go to jail for simply protecting my business that's a source of my livelihood. That's an important bill. Wendy McNamara, Representative Wendy McNamara, is chairman of the Courts and Criminal Code Committee, and we haven't gotten her to hear that bill in the last 2 years. We're hoping to do that this year because Jim Lucas has filed that bill again. We're coming up on the quarter hour. We're going to take a break. We come back, I hope to have Representative Craig Haggard. This is kind of a spontaneous interview, but Craig said he's willing to do it. So we're hoping to have Craig Haggard on to discuss his bill, House Bill 1323, that would protect your information if you're an Indiana holder or a holder of an Indiana license to carry handgun. We'll be right back. This is Guy Relford on The Gun Guy Show on 93 WIBC. And welcome back. I'm Guy Relford on The Gun Guy Show on 93 WIBC. We're here in our last segment. But there's a very solid bill that's been introduced by my friend Craig Haggard, who's a new representative. This is his first term, was just elected in the last election. Craig is about as solid as you can possibly get on Second Amendment issues, having actually worked for NRA for some period of time. And he's also just an all-around good guy. He's a guy I've gone shooting with. I've shot clays with him. And he's just a good guy all the way around. And he's introduced House Bill 1323. And what this would do is it would protect your information if you're either an applicant or a holder of an Indiana license to carry handgun, and put specific limitations on to whom that can be released, to what government agencies and whatnot, and under what circumstances. Now, why should we be concerned about this? Well, first of all, when records are held by a government agency, like the Indiana State Police, a lot of times they're subject to what are called Open Records Act requests. And we've seen across the country, fairly recently, a newspaper in Memphis, Tennessee, published a list of everybody who had a concealed carry license, quote unquote, in Tennessee. And it was malicious. It was specifically malicious. Indiana's law already has some limitations, but Craig's bill would make that much better. And we have. It was very spontaneous. I think I pulled you out of a dinner, Craig, and I thank you so much for being willing to talk to us on short notice. And we're in kind of a short segment. But tell our listeners what it is you're trying to accomplish with House Bill 1323.
Okay, yeah, no problem coming out of the dinner, because this is an important issue. Basically, what I'm trying to accomplish is actually a very simple word change in the current law about people who have gun licenses. And currently it says we can, for share personal information of gun license holders to federal law enforcement for law enforcement or police activity. It's very, very general. I just want to change it to where it says, and the bill basically states that to share information, it has to be an active, ongoing investigation for an individual with probable cause of the crime that has been committed. So, I mean, pretty standard. We'll share, of course we'll share with somebody who's committed the crime, and you have an active ongoing investigation with a case file. But beyond that, we're going to protect our Hoosiers information. And that's basically what the bill is.
Yeah, and there's actually an advantage for gun owners to the extent, let's say somebody's being investigated for a gun-related crime, it can actually help that individual for the state police to confirm to law enforcement who are investigating them that they've been issued a license to carry handgun. They've passed that background check, and the state of Indiana says they're lawful to possess a gun. That can actually help out a person who's under the subject of a criminal investigation by authorities. So that's not a bad thing. What your bill does, and the reason I'm a fan of it, and I'm gonna be there hopefully when it's heard, and we'll talk more about that in a second, when it's heard in committee. But I'm a fan of it because it would put restrictions to prevent that information being released in a way that can be abused.
Correct. I mean, because it's not just about gun. I mean, yes, this one in particular is about gun information. But what if you have federal agencies that want to start gathering lists of folks that are pro-life against or pro-abortion or school board parents? I mean, it's stopping the overreach of federal authorities to just gather a list of individuals, whether it's what you believe in or what you don't believe in. It's just still, it's a slippery slope, and I just want to protect that information.
It is, and I applaud you for bringing this bill. What do you think the prospects are? How are you feeling about it?
You know, I'm thrilled. I mean, number one, as a freshman, to get a bill heard, very, very excited. Actually, it's my first bill to be
That's awesome.
Heard in front of committee, so I'm fairly excited. And everybody I've spoken with is excited. I have three co-authors, Mike Speedy, Michelle Davis, and Julie McGuire. So that's filled up, and I've had additional folks who want to be on the bill. I've had nothing but positive feedback. So I don't know. I feel good about it. I think every legislator goes in thinking their bill is the best ever. What's wrong with it until people start beating up?
That's fair.
I do think it's a very simple bill that says, hey, we're not going to not share information with you, but we just need to put some guide rails on this thing to make sure that it's for the proper reasons.
Well, anyone who wanted to support this bill, Lord knows we have listeners to my show, and we have members of the 2A Project, our gun rights organization, who show up and they take their own time and come in to support pro-gun legislation or oppose anti-Second Amendment legislation. What you think there'll be then an opportunity to testify at the committee hearing?
Well, everybody's obviously able to testify, either register online or in person. Just sign the piece of paper. I know it's going to be on Wednesday in Courts and Criminal Code, and I don't know the exact time yet. I should know that, but you kind of pulled me out of the event.
I gave you all a 30-second advance notice on this interview. So
I know. But I appreciate you talking about it. So,
well, that's awesome. Well, let me leave you with this, and we've got about a minute. But how are you finding your first going into your fourth week in the General Assembly? Does it feel like you're drinking out of a fire hose, or are you getting through it pretty well?
I think I'm doing all right. It definitely is a fire hose. Not much different though when I was in the Marine Corps and going to new squadrons or new theaters of operation. But it's just it's exciting to be part of the process. I mean, I'm a history guy. I love the process. I love the democracy. I just love the whole process, and I'm really, really enjoying myself.
Well, I have every confidence that if you can manage flying fighter airplanes, fighter jets for the Marine Corps, you can probably manage getting your way through the Indiana General Assembly just fine.
And nobody's shooting at me in this, at least in the General Assembly, so it's not too bad.
Exactly right. Well, hey, Representative Craig Haggard, new representative this year. I'm thrilled. I was thrilled to see you run. I was thrilled to see you win. And you're doing exactly what we were hoping you were going to do, which is going in there and fighting for our Second Amendment rights as well as other sound policies in the state of Indiana. So thank you so much.
All right. Awesome. Thanks for having me on. Thanks, guys. Appreciate
Absolutely.
It.
And that will wrap up this week's The Gun Guy Show. I hope you enjoyed it. Hope you come back next week. This is Guy Relford on The Gun Guy Show on 93 WIBC. Mm-hmm.